Hello, hello. It is Adrian Lawrence filling in for John Iadarola at the Damage Report. Thanks so much for joining us. It is a Tuesday, and as a typical Tuesday, it is absolute wild as it concerns the things that the GOP are up to, especially those who are potentially running for president but haven't announced yet. It's really something. But fortunately, we do have someone here to help give these conversations more credence or credit, however we want to go about it. But that's Alonzo Bowden. How are you, Alonzo?
Good morning, Adrian. I don't know that I'm here to lend credence to anything. I think I will make fun of a few things and just, you know, in the pre-show to the audience, they said sometimes you just have to call them stupid. That's why I'm here, to call them stupid.
All right, then. I like that. And yep, that's all you can do sometimes. And we may have to go ahead and default to that at some point during the show. And I think that could possibly come up several times. But again, thank you all for joining us. And definitely jump in those chats. Like, give us some comments, things I want to read during the break. I want to talk to you. And then, of course, we're going to hit you up after the aftermath, after the first hour. It's going to be exciting. And it is going to be quite the journey. And of course, the presidential 2024 run, and those who are hoping to get on that Republican ticket. Yeah, that is quite the journey. And of course, because at maybe just 10 a.m. here in California, it's still never too early to fight.
Ron DeSanctimonious.
I'm frustrated by you not answering a direct question.
Trump needs to take a good look in the mirror.
Let him fight. That's right. Yeah, so even though Ron DeSantis has not announced that he's running for president in 2024, because I think he was doing the whole governor thing last I checked. Well, there are so many people out there already on the campaign trail who are intimidated. And of course, the one who was lashing out the most would be former President Donald Trump. Yeah, 45 released a new ad against DeSantis as their fight heats up. Check this out.
For those of you that didn't notice, Florida was doing great long before Ron DeSantis got there. People are fleeing from New York to Florida and other places because of high taxes and out of control crime. It's really bad. Not because of the governor. Thank you, Mr. President, for doing that. But it's not because of the governor. Florida was doing fantastically. You had a governor named Rick Scott who did a very good job. Even Charlie Crist, a Democrat, did a good job and he had very good numbers. Sunshine and ocean are very alluring. It's not too hard to work with those factors. So just remember, Florida was doing really well long before Ron DeSantis got there.
I really enjoy how Trump goes to thank the president. No, he wasn't thanking President Biden, to my knowledge. He definitely seemed to be thanking himself, because why not reference himself in the third person? Really special man there, who also happened to speak at a rally in Iowa, where he went after DeSantis again, but this time on policy, which is really funny because I didn't know Trump was aware of what policy was.
He also fought against Social Security. He wanted to decimate it and voted against it three times. Voted against Social Security. That's a bad one. A lot of people don't know that, but I think they've been finding out over the last 4 weeks. And on Social Security, well, we're at it. He wanted the minimum retirement age to be lifted to people that are 70 years old, a substantial increase over what it is right now. That's a big increase. And he also voted to severely cut Medicare. I will not be cutting Medicare, and I will not be cutting Social Security. We're leaving the age where it is.
Yes, and I think we know how valuable a Trump promise is. But before we jump into more of Trump's antics toward DeSantis, Alonzo, I want to get your feel on these videos that Trump is putting out and what he is doing on his campaign trail really to attack Ron.
Well, Trump versus Ron DeSantis, I mean, you know, do you want a bottom feeder or a bottom feeder? I mean, there's really no winner in this. I think it's comical to say you're going after Social Security and Medicare in Florida, aka God's waiting room. I mean, the average age of Republicans in Florida, they look at Trump and say, hello, young man. you really got me. Of course, Trump is saying this. Now, personally, I think DeSantis is more dangerous than Trump, because DeSantis knows how to get things done and Trump just talks. But the Republican Party has become a party where it's like the allure is, I hate who you hate, right? That's what they go for. But they're both hating. So when they hate each other, I don't know. This has to be really confusing for a Republican voter to go DeSantis versus Trump, which is lower. I don't know. You know, Trump's name calling and all of that. It's the act is old. The act is old. But the cult, they were in 1,000% on Trump. And now they kind of have to back off, which puts them in a really strange position. I don't know. So Adrian, if you're asking me to choose which one, I'm gonna go ahead and pass on this.
You know, and I would respect that pass. I don't know if, again, if someone were to ask me to choose between the two, there's no choice to be made as far as I'm concerned. But I think you are absolutely correct about DeSantis being far more dangerous, because as far as I'm concerned, DeSantis is more intelligent. Plus, he is more palatable to those Republicans who prefer to toe the line when it comes to sexism, racism, and all the other phobias and hate. And, you know, DeSantis likes to package up his hate in a very palatable way. And Trump, he's already let the cat out of the bag too many times. And everyone wants to go back to the thought that Republicans are really just victims, you know, and that the thought that anything that's not cishet Christian white male being forced upon them is something that is dangerous. It's really special out there. But, you know, the way that Trump and DeSantis keep going at each other, it's something that I think we are going to have to watch for the next few years, unfortunately. And we also know that Trump has gone after DeSantis in terms of his loyalty, because we know Trump loves loyalty. And he said that the governor's political career would have been over had he not endorsed his ultimately successful 2018 campaign. Check this out per Politico. He was dead as a dog. He was a dead politician. He would have been working perhaps for a law firm or doing something else. Asked if he regretted endorsing DeSantis for governor in 2018, Trump responded, yeah, maybe this guy was dead. He was dead as a doornail, I might say that. Trump said he eventually decided to support DeSantis because he defended him while he was facing a Democratic-led impeachment into allegations that he pressured Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky into investigating Joe Biden's family. In fact, DeSantis got on Trump's radar by defending him from special counsel Robert Mueller's probe into Russia's attempt to influence the 2016 election. Remember this, if it weren't for me, Ron DeSanctimonious would right now be working probably at a law firm or maybe a Pizza Hut. I don't know. Yeah, because those two things are really on the same wavelength in terms of a law firm or a Pizza Hut. Yeah, either way. We know that Trump also took to Truth Social and he posted this. Ron DeSanctimonious totally caved in his public relations inspired battle with Disney. That's the only reason he went after them in the first place, to show Mr. Tough Guy. Disney maintained complete exemption from property and sales tax, tax-free bonds, and their incredible fast track permitting. They also gave big political contributions to DeSantis. The whole thing is a hoax. They probably worked together to make him look like a fighter. Read Rick Fogelson, preeminent authority on Disney, and he attached some link to a man's statement. Anyways, DeSantis hasn't responded to this latest attack, but he did downplay the name calling when he was talking to Brian Kilmeade the other day on Fox.
Are you worried of being defined before you do it? Because you watch President Trump come out and try to label you as a Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush type of Republican. And are you worried about being defined because you're governor and you're not a candidate yet?
So when you have a record of achievement, people can call you a name, but that's not going to trump the achievement. And so, you know, we've built an astounding record of achievement. The best is yet to come. We're going to do a lot more over the next few months. And that's what people look to. Now, if I was just like, you know, some random, maybe like a senator that didn't have accomplishments, then maybe someone could try to define you.
I really love the hidden messaging there. He mentioned the word Trump and then saying the best is yet to come, which is Kimberly Guilfoyle's little line that she loves to use. You know, DeSantis is smart. He is smooth. Of course, I don't know it's going to be enough to convince Florida voters, who a number of them, as we've seen, are still on that Trump bandwagon. But I know DeSantis is at least going to try. What do you think, Alonzo?
Well, if you're going to win Florida, you have to win the villages, right? I mean, that's where the voters are. It's funny listening to both of these guys, right? Because Trump says something horrible and then says, I might say that, you know, and well, you just said it. And the other problem with Trump, well, the other funny thing is, you notice he threw Pizza Hut under the bus, but he won't touch McDonald's. Just saying, McDonald's is sacred. Pizza Hut, you could throw under the bus. And then DeSantis did a Trump. He said, I have an astounding record of, you know, great accomplishment. You know how Trump would say he did something, but not say what it was? It was just the greatest, most astounding, most outstanding, whatever. DeSantis just did the same thing. If you look at my record, there is an outstanding record of amazing accomplishment. Name one, like banning books. I guess that counts as an outstanding, I don't know. So they're both talking, they're both flexing. This is like fighters before the boxing match, when they stand up there and they're just talking a bunch of hype to hype the fight and get you to throw your money in the fight. And people are, you know, I guess the fight now is to see who the Republican Party is going to back and whose money is going to go where, right? That's what they're setting up. I'm really not sure, but it's kind of fun to watch and at the same time scary.
Yes, it's very scary, the possibility that any one of them could be leading our nation in the coming years. But you're absolutely right. They're just like fighters before the fight with the weigh-in, you know, chirping at each other, getting chesty, pushing, just talking a bunch of game, but not giving us any substance. And of course, Donald Trump can't provide any substance because, you know, his mind doesn't work that way. And DeSantis, it's like you noted, Alonzo, what are you going to say, that you have done various things that violate the Constitution, not just of Florida, but of the United States? Or are things that are inhumane, like moving individuals who are migrants to different geographic areas under false pretenses. I'd like to think that's somewhat of human trafficking. It just really tells us that this is kind of how they approach their demographic, which is a lot of talk, but no actual substance. And it's sad because it's worked before. And so DeSantis has no reason to think it won't work again. And something I will say, which I covered on Rebel headquarters this past weekend, is the possibility of a split ticket if Donald Trump tried to run on a third party ticket. The thing is, he's not in any way precluded from doing so. It's just that there are six states out there that have a rule that say they will not put you on the ballot if you drop off of a primary, any kind of lead party, and then all of a sudden want to run on a third party ticket, Ralph Nader style. But that doesn't mean that people couldn't write in Trump's name. That doesn't mean he couldn't end up taking away votes like Ralph Nader did back in 2000. It's this kind of stuff could easily go down. And as a result of that, it could be difficult for DeSantis if he ends up getting the Republican nomination and Trump does decide to go ahead and run on a third party ticket because he's salty. Alonzo, really quick, do you think that that's a potential possibility?
Well, when you talk about the third party ticket in the states that say you can't drop from a major party to a third party, this is where Trump's friends on the Supreme Court will come in handy, because they'll just overturn that and let him do it. I mean, we've already seen that this Supreme Court is like, well, we'll rubber stamp whatever he says, you know. So when you talk about the Constitution, and this has never happened in my lifetime, the Constitution becomes optional with this Supreme Court. The actual Constitution, they're like, yeah, we don't like that. We're gonna change, you know, here's a good idea. Let's go back to 1765, because they knew exactly what was going, you know, it. So the rules don't apply. A third party run for Trump would probably be about as successful as Truth Social, you know, his giant third party social media company. But there's no rules here. There are no rules here. This is going to be unprecedented. I don't know what the Democrats are going to do. I don't know how they will take advantage of this Republican infighting. I hope they figure out how to make the most of it. But unfortunately, I don't have a lot of confidence in that either.
Yeah, and I understand that for sure. I don't think that the Supreme Court would back Trump in any way, just in part because I think the way that they've responded so far when he has come to them for help has been one of rejecting him, because I think they're going to be aligned with whoever the Republicans decide to nominate as their leader. Because again, I think Trump showed too many cards. And I think that this is also what's happening, where the walls are closing in on him in terms of indictment, in part because the Republicans now are like, no, we don't want this man to be nominated to our ticket. So we are going to go ahead and give the go ahead for maybe these prosecutors out here who are claiming to be Democrats, but aren't necessarily the case. And they may go ahead and move forward with him. But then again, those are just my thoughts. And we will talk about those prosecutors soon. But first, let's really talk about DeSantis taking a stance as far as Ukraine goes. Because of course, even though he has not announced his run, he does seem to agree with Trump on one thing. That's the support for Ukraine. Now, Tucker Carlson posted a questionnaire on GOP's thoughts on Ukraine in this tweet, where he asked every potential 2024 GOP presidential candidate to answer 6 key questions on the war in Ukraine. And of course, he promised, or he provided those responses. Yeah, typical him. Anyway, from NBC News, we have this. So while the US has, wait, did we have a video there? No? Oh, no, okay, perfect. So with NBC News, while the US has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of the readiness within our military, achieving energy security and independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them. That's what Ron DeSantis had to say. He also said that the Biden administration's virtual blank check funding of this conflict for as long as it takes without any defined objectives or accountability distracts from our country's most pressing challenges, and so on and so on. What we know about DeSantis is that he is doing his best to sound presidential, even though he has not announced he is actually running. But it's interesting that him and Trump actually agree on this issue with regard to the support for Ukraine. Alonzo, any thoughts?
Wow, there's a lot to unpack here. So first of all, DeSantis has no foreign policy experience, so who really cares what he has to say? But it starts with the manufactured problems. Is there a crisis of readiness with our military? Are you kidding? Where did that even come from? I've never heard that before, and they obviously just made it up. A blank check for a war? Oh, you mean like Iraq, who, you know, they seemed to be okay with when Bush was running it. And this is, well, we know that Putin manipulates and controls Trump, and DeSantis seems to be falling for it too. They seem to forget that this whole NATO thing, these are our allies. And when Russia attacks a country and becomes this aggressor and it becomes a threat to the world, yeah, we step in. That is our job, like it or not. We are the world's police force, the world's security force, whatever you want to call it. We have the biggest, most powerful military, and this is our responsibility to step in. Joe Biden did not write a blank check. They're spending money to support it because there are a lot of US interests and the world interests with energy and oil supply and gas prices and everything else. I mean, we're a global economy, you know, and we can't have Russia just taking over countries. Okay, can we keep it simple? We can't have Russia just taking over countries. That's not how the world works. Yes, we have a responsibility to help Ukraine in the spirit of freedom. And isn't that their favorite word, freedom?
Yes, it is their favorite word. And also, you know how the US loves to police, to be the big brother coming around, telling everybody what to do and to regulate and to use our resources toward that. And so it's as complicated as it is, you're absolutely right in terms of we can't allow Russia to just seize countries and also engage in all of these antics that put the world in a hostage-like situation just because they got a few nukes over there. But it's just so interesting that Ron DeSantis feels the need to chime in. But of course, he's trying to score points with the American people because he's going to try to be more than just Florida's governor, which is a very scary thing. But just hearing him talk about, you know, peace being the objective, but also saying that we shouldn't necessarily be invested in this fight at all. It's like you can have one or the other, really. It's a matter of get your hands dirty, get involved to a certain extent, or just suffer the consequences at the end of the day. And it seems like DeSantis is kind of trying to play both sides by suggesting that we shouldn't be involved.
Really, Adrian, quick, Alonzo? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the really scary and comical thing is they're looking for Tucker Carlson approval.
Oh, Lord.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's what he's looking for. He's looking for Tucker Carlson's approval. And then you look at the cult when Tucker Carlson is repeatedly publicly shown to be a liar, Uh-huh. And the cult still absolutely believes him, and you have to get his approval. DeSantis is going to need Fox News.
It's funny, and it seems to definitely have Fox News approval when it comes to DeSantis, but Trump has lost that in toto. And see, we're going to have to see how that's going to impact when it comes election time. But we will definitely hit on more as we discuss more on the damage report. Now, let's go ahead and give you a little bit of a break. All right, so it's Adrian back at the mic, filling in for John Iarulla and the Damage Report, and I'm joined by Alonzo. And of course, we have more updates for you in terms of what, Trump and his antics and a potential indictment?
President Trump has denied from day one having an affair with this woman. What he is an extortion victim. And by the way, it's regardless of whether he did or didn't. He says he didn't. I believe him, and the evidence I think is very powerful that he never had an affair with her. But more importantly, he's a victim of extortion because she came out right before the campaign and said, or the election, and said, unless you pay me, I'm going to make a public story about something that he says is completely untrue. So that's something that would be done irrespective. And here's the key. It would be done irrespective of the campaign, because as Michael Cohen, the convicted perjurer, liar, a guy who has zero credibility, I don't even think he had a law license, quite frankly. Honestly, what he said when he pled guilty, Sean, in this case, was that the client, his client, was doing it for to prevent personal embarrassment and prevent embarrassment to his family. That takes it out of the realm of exclusively campaign finance.
Wow, there is so much to unpack there. We won't get to all of it, but I will quickly say that's interesting. Michael Cohen may not have been a lawyer at all. Didn't he represent like Donald Trump for like 2 decades? Yeah, let's be real here. Also, facts are our friends. And then in addition to that, even if Donald Trump's new angle is that he was extorted by Stormy Daniels, well, still using campaign funds to pay for it would be a violation of the law, and that's a problem. But then again, you know, maybe it's a lawyer in me, because it's definitely not the lawyer in that gentleman you heard speaking, which is Joseph Tropicana. Or Tropopina, I can't really pronounce it because I'm just not, it's not my game. Anyway, that's one of Trump's lawyers speaking with Fox's Sean Hannity, really about the claims that Stormy Daniels now extorted Trump, which is cute how this has evolved. Now, this all comes in the wake of reports that Trump has refused to testify before the Manhattan grand jury. And we know that extension, an offer of opportunity to come testify, it really just means that there's a potential that Trump is about to be indicted as a target. And it's all in connection with his business dealings, specifically whether he paid that hush money to adult film star Stormy Daniels. And of course, the attorney, Tropicana, excuse me, also spoke to Good Morning America, because why not?
So you expect an indictment?
I expect justice to prevail. And if that's the case, George, there shouldn't be an indictment. I mean, this case is outrageous, really. There should be a healthy dose of disgust from the bar, the legal community, prosecutors, defense lawyers alike. It's not what we do. This is not what we do. We are distorting laws to try and bag President Trump. I don't know what's supposed to be. He's leading all the polls. I don't know what it is. But clearly, this prosecutor and this prosecutor's office has made an agenda of trying to get him. They've scoured his personal life and business life for 7 years to try and find something.
Did Trump authorize the payment?
It's not directly related.
Did Trump authorize
George,
the payment?
It's not directly related to the campaign. It's regardless.
We're going to get to that.
Well, let's assume he did for the argument.
He's
for this
actually
argument,
admitted that he did. So the answer to that is yes.
Let's assume he did. Okay, this was a plain extortion, and I don't know since when we've decided to start prosecuting extortion victims. He's denied, vehemently denied, this affair, but he had to pay money because there was going to be an allegation that was going to be publicly embarrassing to him, regardless of the campaign.
Okay, so you know that Trump is shook because he did not have a woman lawyer out there essentially peddling his lies. Because you know he's always chosen very pretty female lawyers to go out there on the media landscape and to do the talking. And that's not what he's going for this time. He is going with this tough guy, Tropicana, who is pushing this extortion angle, which is very new, interesting, but also it doesn't take away from the fact that you can't use campaign funds to satisfy any kind of extortion there whatsoever. But that's just my understanding of the law. And Intelligencer did have this to say. Prosecutors are reportedly looking into whether the payment was properly classified and if business records were falsified in an effort to hide it. The New York Times reports that the grand jury has already heard testimony from Kellyanne Conway, Trump's former campaign manager, as well as David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, and Keith Davidson, who once served as Daniel's attorney. Yeah, they are looking into these things, and it's very interesting because they have the assistance of Michael Cohen, the individual that Tacopina had questioned his legal license, even though Cohen was Trump's former attorney for several years, if not decades, and his fixer. And he happened to testify before the grand jury on Monday. So how'd it go? Well, also the Intelligencer has this. Lanny Davis, his attorney, called Cohen's nearly 3-hour testimony on Tuesday a productive afternoon, saying Cohen answered all questions. This is about accountability and this is about facts and the truth, Davis says. Cohen, who has already spoken to prosecutors several times on this matter, has previously admitted to arranging a payment of $130,000 to adult film star Stormy Daniels in exchange for her silence about an affair she alleges between her and Trump in the early 2000s, while, you know, Melania was postpartum, I believe. Trump has consistently denied the affair ever took place, and in the closing weeks of the 2016 presidential campaign, Cohen has said he arranged a payment from the Trump organization to Daniels in exchange for her silence. The former attorney, who was convicted on federal charges in 2018, has said that Trump later reimbursed him for the money. Wow, that's a lot going on there, but it's something we've heard about for quite some time. And also, it's pretty indicative of the fact that Trump has a lot of people speaking out against the situation with Stormy Daniels. It's a matter of how his company handled that exchange and that money and whether it used its books to, you know, do away with it. Alonzo, thoughts?
Well, this guy, what is it, Papapino or whatever his name is, first of all, has he looked at Trump's history of lawyers? Doesn't he realize he should be fired right about June? I'm thinking by June, this guy will be gone. It was funny listening to him talk because he starts out, we absolutely deny this affair. And then he's like, whether it did or didn't happen. Like within the same interview, he changed his point. Then the same thing when he was being pressed on the payment. We didn't pay, we didn't pay, we didn't pay. Well, if we paid, we were extorted into paying. So we know that he's lying, that he knows something. I don't think Trump's ever going to be indicted. This is just my personal opinion. They've had him too many times, too many of these cases where they're like, okay, this is the one, this is the one. And I don't care if he's indicted. New York is very good at going after him on his financial matters and financial dealings and shutting him down and quite often taking his money. And that I think bothers him more than anything. But this case, did he use campaign funds? Yeah, we know he did. Just like he used them after the insurrection, he's used them for his personal lawyers before. But they find a way that there's always some weird campaign finance rule, or the money was donated to this fund and not that fund, so it was okay to use the money for personal, you know, use. Didn't we have this thing where he bought a painting of himself for like $10,000 with campaign money? And, you know, this is Trump's history. And people keep sending him money. It's like one of these televangelist preachers that drives a Rolls Royce to his private jet. And people who make $20,000 a year still send him money. You know, it's the same thing with Trump. Even that, they had the case where if you donated once, they got your credit card number and it became an automatic monthly donation, and they couldn't prosecute that. So the Stormy Daniels case, I think the vast majority of people believe Stormy Daniels. I think we have everyone testify like, yeah, he paid her $130,000, and now they're just trying to find out where the $130,000 came from. I just don't think that they're going to be able to prove a direct link from his campaign money through Michael Cohen to Stormy Daniels.
I don't necessarily know what they're going to be able to prove. I think that it is all there and it's been there, but I totally agree with you that I just don't know that they're actually going to ever indict him. You know, as much as I want it to be the case, in part because there's just so much illegality, the criming is rampant. And yet our society is not willing to hold a wealthy white male former president accountable for it. I just can't see it happening.
He has so many members of the cult willing to take the fall. I mean, and that's why it's a cult, right? When you're willing to sacrifice yourself for the leader, that's part of it being a cult. And there are always people here willing to take the fall for this. I don't know how close to him it will get.
Yeah.
But so far, even though it's one of those things like we know it, but we can't prove it. And again, it's just such a parallel to, you know, a crime organization, you know, like a mob movie or something where there's always somebody else who has to take the fall, not the Godfather. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that could be why Trump selected his new attorney, Tucker Pina. But I'll just leave that there. And let's move on to our next story, which takes us from Trump to Biden. So we know Biden right now is in the process of signing a new gun order out there, which is something that we need more gun safety, because the fact is mass shootings are going up. Absolutely, without question. This, according to Forbes, 110, that's the number of mass shootings that have occurred in 2023, according to the Gun Violence Archive. The US surpassed 100 mass shootings so far this year, earlier in March, which is the earliest point in at least a decade that the number of annual mass shootings has hit triple digits. Yep, and so we had some action today. Trump is expected to sign an executive order during a visit to Monterey Park, the site of the January Lunar New Year mass shooting that took the lives of 11 people. And Biden's order will reinforce the legislation within the Safer Communities Act, which, according to the AP, it is viewed by gun control advocates as a good start, but one that doesn't go far enough. After the law was signed, there were 11 other mass shootings, according to a database of mass killings since 2006, maintained by the Associated Press, USA Today, and Northeastern University. Those killings don't include shootings in which fewer than four people were killed, and gun violence is also rising nationwide. The plan also calls on Attorney General Merrick Garland to shore up the rules for federally licensed gun dealers so that they know they are required to do background checks in addition as part of the license. And this is great because in addition to mandating federal agencies to enforce the legislation, it'll also involve reporting of data analytics or ballistics and all of this other information that is incredibly necessary, because we are seeing not only that we have both parties very dissatisfied, or people who are reporting, no matter what their partisan politics are, very dissatisfied about our nation's gun policies. People do want control, whether they are Democrats or Republicans. People are unhappy and they feel unsafe, and they have every reason and right to be, given what we've seen in terms of mass shootings and the increasing amount of unnecessary gun violence. Alonzo.
Wow, Adrian, there's so much here. To start with, the statistics start out like we're talking about college basketball or something, where it's like, oh, we made it to the triple digits faster than we have in any other year. The fact that we every year make it to triple digits in mass shootings is utter insanity. This is just what it said. It's a small start. It doesn't make a difference, right? So you push the federal regulated gun dealers to do the background checks, but we still have the tremendous gun show loophole where you can go to a gun show and buy one person to another and not report it to anybody. These high powered assault style rifles, the fact that they're for sale, and no one will stand up to this, you know, and many people say, and I'm in agreement, Sandy Hook was kind of the turning point. When we accepted Sandy Hook as okay, that's when we said, there's no stopping the gun lobby. I'm still waiting for a politician to be strong enough to stand up to the gun lobby, to speak. You talked about it being bipartisan, and it is. There's a huge common sense element in the United States looking for someone to say, enough, stop it with the guns, stop it with the assault weapons. And I think that person would find tremendous support. We have Uvalde, where these kids were blown to pieces by AR-15s, and the parents wanted to do what Emmett Till's mother did. They were like, show people what an AR-15 does to a child's body. I don't know when we get the outrage. You know, Adrian, other countries look at us like, Are you insane? There's no explanation for this. So Biden's going to sign another executive order, and it's just, it's all words. There's no meat to this. Until we go after it, until we're outraged as a nation and put a stop to it the way we did, you know, we did this with drunk driving, right? We did this with smoking cigarettes indoors and secondhand smoke, but we can't stop bullets. We can stop cigarette smoke and we can't stop bullets. I don't know. It's incomprehensible. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know how many more kids have to be shot, how many more grocery stores, you know, black people go shopping at the grocery store, they get murdered en masse. People go to their religious place, they get murdered en masse. And it's everybody, it's no one group. Everybody's getting shot. Everyone's getting shot, and there's no outrage. There's nobody strong enough to stand up. Come on, Biden. Take a stronger stance against this. Use the executive orders. Make them mad. So what? Make them mad. Watch how much support you get.
And the thing is that I've seen other countries who had modeled their constitutions after the United States. And when they realized that gun control was a problem, they went ahead and pulled back on the Second Amendment. And the thing is that the Second Amendment, and when I say pull back, I mean they rewrote their constitutions. And the thing is, our Second Amendment is not what it seems. It is completely bastardized by the courts to uplift the GOP and their love of money from gun manufacturers. The fact that it is a bastardized reading doesn't mean that it's true or accurate. And I recommend everyone read Carol Anderson's book called The Second, because when you understand the history and the legacy of the interpretation of the Second Amendment, and when you understand the fact that we should not have this unregulated right to guns, basically, and the unmitigated damage it has done and will continue to do, that it's truly a reflection of a lot of the hate that is in our hearts. And we're going to talk more about that when we return from this break, because the thing is that hate is on the rise. The fact is that hate is going up, and it's going up in a measurable way. In the United States, hate crimes have spiked by 35% in 2021. And that's according to FBI statistics. And bear in mind that when it comes to FBI stats, that means that those are the ones that were reported. The vast majority are not reported. In addition to that, not only are a lot of hate crimes not reported to police, but a lot of police do not provide their data on it or do not categorize them as such. So knowing that this has increased, despite the fact that it's not there in terms of the data or that there are already weaknesses, that should tell you that there's probably a much larger issue than we've seen. So we know that the FBI did record a total of 10,840 hate crime incidents in 2021, up from 8,052 in 2020. And that's according to the additional supplemental data from the agency's annual hate crimes report, this per the New York Times. The Bureau had released hate crime statistics in December, but had announced it could not compile accurate data because the scores of police departments across the country, including New York City and most cities in California, had not submitted information to a new enhanced national reporting system. Now, the increase is largely based on a spike in hate crimes that targeted people for their sexual orientation or gender identity. Yep, so the FBI recorded 1,707 anti-LGB hate crimes in 2021. That's a 54% increase from those recorded in 2022. In those incidents, 1,979 people were targeted for their sexual orientation. And also based on a UCLA estimate of 10 million LGB individuals who identify as such, that means that roughly one in every 5,000 lesbian, gay, or bisexual people in the US were a victim of a hate crime. That's a lot. Hate crimes against transgender and gender nonconforming people, well, they rose by 29% in 2021, with 342 incidents recorded versus 266 incidents in 2020. Also bear in mind that when we're talking about the trans community, we're talking about less than 2% of the US population. And a lot of individuals do not report to police because police will not help uplift or support them in any way. So again, these are just the ones that are reported and from the offices and the departments that actually keep stats who shared them with law enforcement. Yeah, this is really reflective of our society. We also know that the same UCLA study estimated that there were about 1.4 million trans people in the US, as I mentioned. Also really meaning that the FBI recorded one anti-trans hate crime victim for every 3,500 members of our community. That's wild. It just continues to show you that there is considerable hate. Also, the bigots are still out there being racist. In raw numbers, hate crimes, discrimination on race, ethnicity, ancestry was the biggest. The FBI recorded 6,600 hate crimes in that category in terms of race in 2021, up 27% from 5,227. Black Americans were the most often targeted group for their race or ethnicity. One anti-black hate victim was reported for about every 1,200 black people in the country. Asian Americans were also disproportionately targeted, with roughly one reported victim for every 23,000 members of that group. The FBI also recorded 909 anti-Hispanic hate crime victims, over 698 incidents, accounting for roughly one reported victim for every 70,000 Hispanics in the country. And despite the right wing decrying reverse racism, well, the data really doesn't bear it out. So in 1,107 incidents, 1,341 white Americans were targeted for their race, accounting for one victim for every 170,000 white Americans. And the latest category investigated was hate crime based on religious affiliation, with Sikhism, Judaism, and Islam followers having the highest risk of victimization per individual. FBI registered 185 incidents targeting 195 Sikhs, meaning roughly one in every 2,500. FBI recorded 817 anti-Semitic incidents targeting 869 people and 152 incidents targeting Muslims. It really does show you that hate is very much alive and well. And definitely what I will say as it concerns black people and the rise in incidents of anti-black hate being the most often targeted group for their race. I will also say that this increase is also a result of the George Floyd protests and the push for change, because that's how it works in the United States. Whenever there is a push for justice, whenever there is any indicia that maybe the playing field is becoming just that little bit more level for black people, there is always a push for the pendulum to swing back. And that's exactly what these individuals have tried to do in terms of silencing black people to keep us in fear. And this is truly a reflection of the hate that underlines our society and the reason that it will continue to persist until it is addressed and racism is something that people take seriously and actually do the work to resolve. Alonzo.
Again, Adrienne, you bring up these topics that are just so big to try to comment on. So, you know, black people are still the number one hated group in America. Yeah, because the fear is still fed, right? And you have like DeSantis with this whole thing of, no, we're not going to teach the actual history of America and how poorly black people have been treated because some white people might feel bad. The fact that we've added new groups in our hate statistics, again, mind boggling. Like, oh yeah, now we have to add that the people that they hate for being in the LGBTQ community and start dividing up how they're attacked for who they are, and then the religious affiliation. And now you have the overlap, right? You definitely have an overlap between these categories where you're hated. And Adrienne, I hate to say it, but I used to do jokes about this. And jokes become reality, where I said, you go to these places and I hate you. I'm not even sure why. I'm not sure what category you fall into. I just hate you. That's become reality now. These numbers are staggering. How many people are attacked simply for existing? And the fact that people fear you so much because you exist that they think it's okay to attack and quite often kill you. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is, but the answer, they want to stop education because education would make a difference. They want to stop integration of schools. Integration of schools does more to battle racism than you can imagine, because when kids are little kids, they're playing and they have a brown friend and they have an Asian friend, they have a black friend and this and that, and they don't know the difference. They just know that they have friends. So they're like, well, let's put a stop to that.
Yeah, I think that's important. And it's really sad that a lot of people in the United States don't realize, they want to think that we're post-racial. And the reality is that we're not. The last school in the US that was desegregated was in 2016 in Texas. The fact is that we have significant problems and they're everywhere. But we definitely want to hit this last story before we head into the aftermath. So let's go ahead and talk about what's going on there with the Maryland GOP governor's people. Check this out.
Mr. McGrath and I spoke regularly and spoke last night in anticipation of the trial beginning today. And I have no idea where he is. I hope that he's safe. And I hope to speak to him very soon.
Yikes, yeah, that definitely sounds foreboding. That was the lawyer to Roy McGrath. That's the one-time chief of staff for former Maryland GOP governor Larry Hogan. And this is all coming after his failure to appear in court on an arrest warrant. Now, Baltimore and Washington DC agents with the US Marshal Service were assisting in executing that arrest warrant as McGrath stands accused of a variety of crimes, largely financial in nature, which include wire fraud, embezzlement, and allegations of falsifying a government document. McGrath is accused of receiving severance payment worth 1 year of his salary of his previous position to $133,648. As the head of Maryland Environmental Service, a quasi-governmental entity, McGrath is also accused of a failure to take vacation time while traveling to Florida and a European cruise. The falsifying documents charge stem from allegations that Hogan knew about McGrath's severance payment from the MES before moving to the governor's office and adding that Hogan signed off on the agreement. McGrath also faces state wiretapping violation charges for allegedly illegally recording phone calls. You know what? The man is really, he's got a rap sheet coming for him. And that seems to be the case, which is why, you know, not showing up would kind of be problematic, especially when, you know, you get that whole warrant thing. Anyways, but since news broke of McGrath's federal investigation and charges, Hogan has forcefully denied knowing anything about the severance agreement between McGrath and MES. And it really seems to indicate here that, again, these individuals have no respect for our system in any way, even when they were very much a part of it. Alonzo.
Well, he's just not a good criminal. I mean, you know, the first thing you learn in crime, right? Crime is a cash business. You don't write checks, you don't collect checks. That there is a paper trail. You don't sign an authorization to pay a criminal by check. There is a paper trail. These guys are just not very good at it. You know, if you're on a cruise, if you're on a trip where it's documented, you're, I don't know, hundreds, if not thousands of miles away from the office, yeah, you gotta put in vacation time, okay? You can't say you were working remotely from a cruise during, so what we have here is quite simply a bad criminal, a dumb criminal, who's gonna be arrested, who's gonna go down on federal charges, and you have a governor trying to distance himself so he doesn't go down with him. And the note there is you shouldn't have signed the paper. The minute you sign something, you're gonna be in trouble, all right? Mm-hmm. It's crime, stick to cash. That's how crime works, okay? You can't be Venmoing your fellow criminals.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I would have said the same thing when it came to Matt Gaetz, but we saw he got the pass. So I'm sure it emboldened a lot of them to go ahead and keep doing their business dirty and have all these paper trails, and that it'd be okay because you can find somebody powerful to give you a hall pass for that. It's amazing this fact that the governor of the state of Maryland is going to be a witness for the government. Like that's just wild. But again, like you noted, these people are not good criminals and they've been intertwined in all sorts of nonsense. And the thing is, it just ends up hurting citizens and the people. Before we head to the aftermath, what are your thoughts, Alonzo?
The governor's trying to save himself. It's one of those things. They're like, listen, we have proof that you were involved. He was like, oh, I'll be happy to testify against this guy. You know, this guy doesn't have friends. You think you have friends in high places, you find out you don't. So he's going down and the governor is going to act ignorant of it and sell this guy out. Again, it's just a really bad crime. Like this wouldn't even be a good movie of the week.
Oh, come on now. It could be a good Lifetime movie, you know.
I don't think so. Unless really? There's a love interest between the two of them. I just don't see Lifetime buying this story. Now, if there's a love interest who's involved with the governor and this clown, then maybe Lifetime buys it. Otherwise, nah.
Okay, but what about like Tubby or something, right? Isn't that what it's called? Yeah, like they've been known for having some sketchy movies. So it could possibly be good. I'm just wondering, is this man actually gonna show up at some point? Like it's a hell of a thing to be on the run.
Oh, they'll find him. He's not smart enough to stay hidden. He's using his actual ID and his real credit cards at a hotel somewhere. They'll find this guy.
Oh my God. Well, I hope they find him, hopefully quickly. And I hope all of justice is actually done, because we've seen way too many people get away with all sorts of nonsense while we the people are out here slaving away and working every day and abiding by the law. And of course, actually, we will get more into what you'd love to share just as we hit the aftermath, which will be happening momentarily. Yay.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.